Yeah.
Yeah, I got it.
Got it. How's your tea?
It's hot, so I haven't had any yet.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking
at
mine.
We're going to get there. We're going to get through this.
I'm very upset. I'm always upset when I can't drink something right away. I think it's a problem.
Yes, I don't have patience.
Like, right. I know that when you get an old fashioned, you're supposed to kind of let it sit. I mean, you shouldn't be given an old fashioned without it being properly dealt with beforehand.
But, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. Like my strategy when I'm making an old fashioned or a Negroni or anything that's stirred is that I want the glass that I'm stirring it in to go down to the same temperature as the ice. Like the glass should be ice cold.
Oh, okay.
And then you start setting up your glassware. So you get your big cube and your glass and your garnishes and everything like that. And you do that.
All your fancy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you pour it in and it should go straight to the table.
And then it goes right to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And none of this letting everyone have a taste first.
What do you mean? Like the other people around the bar or?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, just.
Well, I've seen that before where like servers will come up and like stick a straw into a drink.
Yeah. We try to not do that anymore.
Yeah. I wonder why. Like,
yeah. Not great. Not great, Bob.
Well, what is that done for? Is that to just tell which drink is which?
Like the tasting or yeah. No, that's just so the servers can taste. And like, there is the legitimate, like, we should know what things taste like thing. But yeah. Also, like, don't do that.
Oh, that's a frowned upon thing?
I think that, yeah, that we don't really do that anymore. If you want to taste something, you can, like, I don't know.
Order do it on your own time.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I always thought it was like a big tray of drinks. Oh, I need to figure out which one of these is which. But I guess, yeah, that makes sense that they'd just be like, you don't see them like sticking a straw in each one being like, oh, this one's good. Oh, this one's good.
Yeah. One's yeah. Good. You really, yeah.
That's what the garnishes are for.
Really, most restaurants of any standing will just do a staff tasting.
Oh, okay. Like everyone here's an old fashioned. And those must be kind of fun or bad at times.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. every time before we address it. Hi everyone, welcome to the newest episode of Let's Watch That, the film review podcast. Is me, your host, Bryce Logan. There are many out there like it, but this one is mine. This episode is sponsored by brewk.ca. More on that a little bit later today, but let me introduce my guest with no delay. It is Xavier de Salaberry. He's been on many episodes.
And died today.
Hey, it yes. dies today. It how are you doing, man?
I feel good. Feel a little exhausted, but like, yeah, like kind of settling in, getting in the chair, you know, captain's chair as it is, and getting ready to do the damn thing.
Yeah, you're just getting to do the damn deed, just getting diddly did done. Yeah. And mm-hmm. You know, you just cleaned your apartment, you were saying to me before, like it can be a tiring thing, you know.
Cleaning. Well, it's more satisfactory than anything else, just not have clutter around. I think it's so important.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm very much one who likes a clutter-free house.
Yeah.
If I can help it. But, you know, you do what you can. So, Xavier, it's the holiday season.
Okay.
Wonderful time of year.
Yeah.
Everyone loves it. It's just such an incredible time.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. All you people out there celebrating with parents. but so Christmas, I don't think I've ever had you on around Christmas time before, have I?
No, we haven't done a Christmas movie.
No. And so like, what's your opinion of Christmas movies?
God, there's so few that I actually enjoy watching. It's a Wonderful Life. I cry at the end every time.
Really?
Yeah, really. It's just perfect. Like it really is
perfect.
I mean, don't know. It just does it for me, I guess, is what I'm saying.
And now, how old were you when you first saw It's a Wonderful Life?
Honestly, I didn't like the movie when I was like younger, and I would like, I knew what happened, but I it was only like 2 years ago that I like sat down and watched it.
Really?
And it was, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's shocking to me.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like, if you need a little reminder, like about the worth of your own life, it's a pretty good movie for that.
I mean, fair. Maybe it does need to be watched by more sometimes, but at the same time, it does do that thing that a lot of those movies do, where it is very much just like, see, it's just, you have tons of people that love you. And it's like, some people may not be able to come out of that and still feel that way. You know, mm-hmm. It's like this character is still very lucky. With what he has, he's actually pretty selfish in the time when he is like gonna jump off the bridge and everything. I want to live.
Yes.
But for you in Christmas movies, is it very much like when you hang out around the house, are you guys watching something or is something on, or is it just kind of like, is there Christmas music?
And my sister always like to put on fucking Elf, and I don't like that movie. So
you don't like Elf.
Oh boy,
we have to have some words today, Xavier, because
we had a lot of heated discussions
we're on a text thread because folks, I'm building a computer, so I will not stop annoying the shit out of my friends that are going to help me do it. But
we should totally record that evening.
No, that's a very
boring. It'll be good. Yeah.
But I brought up, me and Mike were waxing on about how great The Social Network was. And
no. You didn't say it was great.
You said it was the best film in the
2010s.
Yes. And I agree.
And it was so flippant too. Just the way you just casually dropped. It's pretty incredible how like
we all just agree with it. Well, yeah.
Like, how like the best movie of the 2010s was made in was released in 2010.
That was Michael. But yeah.
And what was my response? Like, no.
Yeah. But then like.
And to my.
Then
and
you,
like,
then no, to no, your no. chagrin. Every movie you brought up, we kind of shit on.
Well, I didn't respond to anything you had to say because it was, I mean, to be fair, somebody said that Her was amazing, and it is, and it's better than The Social Network. Look.
But then like, you said
movies,
Joker.
Movies that I enjoyed better than The Social Network that were released in the 2010s. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, or that I think are better movies. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, 1917, Black Swan.
Yeah.
Her, Get Out, and I didn't even push it that hard, but no. Honestly, maybe even Joker, and you said, wow, Joker is not good.
Yeah. Joker's a wet fart. I hate that
Mike
movie.
Mike, ooh, thumbs down on Joker.
Yeah, you didn't push it that hard, but I honestly, like, I'm not gonna sit here and say that people don't have their opinions about what is the best movie of the 2010s? That's fine.
Social Network isn't even Sorkin's best movie, I don't think.
What are you talking about? Yes, it is. Of course it is.
Or Sorkin's best work, I should say, not best movie.
Yeah, okay. Maybe the pilot of The West Wing is his best work. But I would still agree. I would still say that.
There's many episodes that are of that show that are better than The Social Network.
I me and Mike stand very firmly in the collective that Social Network is the best.
You're telling me the Social Network is better than A Few Good Men?
Yes.
Oh my god.
Better written than A Few Good Men, yes.
Okay.
Or it's a better movie, but not better written. I don't know.
Okay. You know what? We don't have to have.
You're like, I don't want to get.
I like the Trial of the Chicago 7. I mean, it's more formulaic, but I like it better.
I mean, yeah, you can like it better. That's fine. Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was interesting that
you don't
brought
have
up
to
Joker.
Know. Yeah. Well, I honestly, I was prepared. I watched Joker fully prepared to not like that movie.
Yeah.
And I mean, was kind me too, of like blown but, away by what it did. So.
I mean, yeah. Well, that's it. Thanks for listening, folks. No. No, I just thought it was interesting.
End call. Yeah.
End call. Recording stopped. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's when you start getting into the best of a period of time, as soon as you put the title best on something, everyone's gonna have
a and it's lot arbitrary of anyway.
Yeah, it's all periods of bullshit. Like,
it's a yeah. But whatever, it doesn't matter. And it does, but it doesn't.
But it is everyone who goes like, I mean, me and Mike were even doing it, being like, no, you're wrong. You know, and like we didn't even say you were wrong. We did. I think I did say straight up you're wrong. That movie sucks.
Joaquin but it's not Phoenix but it's not good in that but we're movie. Friend, but we're friends, so it's like it's not like I know that you don't mean it because A, you're wrong. And then second of all, like
exactly. Yeah, we know that we're just, you know, we all know that you're wrong and that's okay.
I know that you're wrong and that's okay too.
Exactly. Yeah. And I appreciate that. But it, you know, it's like I'm not attacking your character. I'm not, you know, you're not attacking my character, and that's what's important. But I really like The Social Network, and I think more people should see it if they haven't seen it, but I think everyone's seen it. I don't want to meet somebody who hasn't seen The Social Network. How many times have you seen The Social Network though?
Once.
Oh,
see. Have you done it for the podcast?
No, I haven't, and I don't think I'm gonna have you on to do it.
Well, I mean, it's only been 10 years. Maybe it's time for me to rewatch it again.
11 years. Yeah, I mean, I rewatched Black Swan 3 years ago or something, and I was like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, this is good.
Yeah,
I mean, I bought it and then I just never watched it. I just put it on my shelf, but it was just like, I have that now. I know that's a good movie. I saw it in theaters and I liked it.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know.
I actually comparing the two in the sense that like Aronofsky and Sorkin are such,
well, it's David Fincher.
Fincher? I thought it was Aronofsky that was.
No, Black Fincher Swan. Did Social Network.
Oh, Fincher's Social Network.
Yeah. Sorkin just wrote Social Network. He didn't direct it.
Sorry, but what I mean is that these creators, they're very particular, like Aronofsky and these people. And what
they do. They're also very polarizing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's fair. It's fair.
Yeah. I mean, and that was a dynamite year anyway.
2010? Crazy year.
Yeah.
I mean,
Fighter, Swan,
King's Speech,
Inception.
The Town, I think.
The Tan.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, we've talked about this before. That's a great year. True Grit remake, Winter's Bone.
Are you looking at the list right now?
No, that's off the top of my head.
Oh damn.
Yeah this was the last year I really cared about Oscar stuff.
Well, I remember rushing to watch that Oscars actually. Yeah, The Runaways were that year. Housemaid, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, the first Insidious, 127 Hours. That was the other one that was on the tip of my tongue. Shutter Island, Unstoppable, the Great Crane movie.
Okay,
fucking love that movie. MacGruber, The Fighter.
Okay, we're just naming movies. Now you're just throwing things out there, man. You're just saying words at this point.
The other guys. Yeah, that's a good movie.
Okay, that's a dope.
I know how much you like the movie Red. That came out that year.
No, I have actually never seen it. I just knew that that was the premise of what we were talking about.
Oh, about writing script. Yeah. You're like, wait, damn it. Can't do it.
Fucking Red. Yeah.
Somebody's already done it. But what somebody else hasn't already done, wait, that's a lie. We're going to talk about the movie Dune today from 2021, directed by Denis Villeneuve. And
Villeneuve, but yes,
I thought it was Villeneuve.
There's a V on the end, dog.
Yeah, but it's French, dog. I didn't know that.
So Villeneuve. There's words. There's letters that they do pronounce, and words that it. Fuck.
There's letters that they do pronounce, and other ones that they don't.
Yes, and V is one of the ones that do get pronounced at all.
V is always pronounced.
Yeah,
Villeneuve. Okay. Denis Villeneuve. See, that just doesn't sound as fun, but whatever. It's written by John Spatis and Denis Villeneuve and Eric Roth. And Eric Roth is known for writing quite a bit. What are some of his credits? Dune, A Star is Born, Elias, Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Streaming Cloud, Incredibly Close, Good Shepherd, Munich, Ali, Insider, Postman. Oh, a little movie called Forrest Gump.
Yeah, so he's just had some things.
Yeah, he's been around. I think he might be a script doctor, just depending on those credits there. Mm-hmm. And then the other writer, John Spatis, who he wrote, he's the writing partner of what's his name from Prometheus, Doctor Strange, Passengers, the guy who wrote Prometheus. Who was the other writer who wrote Prometheus? Damon Lindelof. But yeah, so then this writer wrote Doctor Strange, Passengers, The Mummy. I've talked about him before.
The cruise mummy.
Yeah, the cruise mummy.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Not the fun one.
Yeah, exactly. Not the fun one. Not the good one. The movie Dune stars Timothy Chalamet, Rebecca Ferguson, Oscar Isaac, Jason Momoa, Stellan Skarsgård, Josh Brolin, Javier Bardem, Stephen McKinley Henderson. Dave Bautista shows up, Zendaya shows up, Charlotte Rampling shows up, Benjamin Clementine. Yeah, lots. Am I missing someone?
Not off the top of my head.
I'm missing people obviously, but like Babs, Olusukumokan.
That was the Imperial messenger or whatever. Yeah,
the guy who plays Jameis at the end.
Oh, okay.
Who's the fighter?
Never mind. Yeah.
In the movie, had a budget of, oh boy, $165 million, brought in $390 million at the box office.
Fantastic. Which doesn't include streaming.
Which doesn't include streaming, and it came out during a pandemic, so it's probably up there on the highest grossing films of during the pandemic.
But that's worldwide, right?
Yeah, that'll be worldwide. Yeah. And it premiered at the Venice Film Festival. And the director, Denis Villeneuve. I have done a couple episodes of his movies on my podcast. He did Sicario, Arrival, Blade Runner 2049, Enemy, Prisoners. I've done Enemy and Prisoners on my podcast. Polytechnique. Yeah, and now most recently Dune, and soon to be Dune Part 2, and Dune Part 3. Xavier, what'd you think of Dune? You're a fan of Dune. You've put your hand in the Dune pie since this was announced.
Yeah, I was all aboard the hype train from the very beginning.
Yeah.
On the forums, on the Dune forums and the Dune memes subreddit, there was the saying of I must not hype is the mind killer. However, I decided to go all in. The first thing, of course, was that it was Denis Villeneuve. I've loved his work, so that was like, okay, he seems like the right guy to do it.
Yeah,
100%. And then wow, he's getting some impressive cast members for this. And yeah. Then they started filming, and you know, some shots from the set were leaked, and it was like, wow, this looks really good. Just like the costuming and makeup and, you know, character looks and everything like that. And I mean, most pivotally, Timothy Chalamet as the main character is like, 'cause that is I similar to Frodo in The Hobbit. It is such a huge role in what you have to be able to portray and what you have to be able to communicate non-verbally. I'll get into the weeds of the book without spoiling anything from part two of that. From the very beginning, this is a book I've loved since I was 12 or 13 when I first read it.
Okay. So that is good to hear. I mean, it's very interesting. So, Dune fans are pretty, you guys like Lord of the Rings fans and a lot of people fanatics, just when it comes to anything, it is pretty sacred text, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because this is just from my understanding. Like, I don't know anything apart from what I've seen in this movie and then just rumblings.
Yeah. And you've seen the Lynch
Dune. No, I've never seen the Lynch Dune.
Okay. No. Sweet.
So like I'm going in with just this in my mind. The only things I ever heard about from the Lynch Dune were from friends of the podcast, Greg, when I went to go see this movie for the first time in theaters. He was telling me, because he was a big fan of the book and not the movie, not the Lynch movie, because what they do in the Lynch movie apparently with the voice is they make it a weapon and people are running around saying like boom and stuff like that, right?
They do some interesting things.
So a lot of people, just for the history of Dune, is the one that came out in the 90s was widely regarded as terrible.
80s, right? Yeah.
80s? Sorry.
Yeah, 80s, Dune, bad. Sci-fi miniseries from early 2000s, like that the Sci-Fi Channel did, problems, yes, but like surprisingly good.
The William Hurt one that came out in 2000?
Surprisingly good.
Miniseries, yeah.
You would hate it because the CGI is, oh my God, so dog shit.
The effects are really bad.
Really bad. It suffers from the same thing that everything does, where the guy who's playing Paul is just like twice the age of what the character is supposed to be.
He's supposed to be a kid, right?
Well, he's like 14 in the book. 14, so,
yeah.
You know,
so in this movie, they make him like 18.
Yeah, right? Which is like manageable. Totally fine.
Yeah. So the Dune miniseries was seen as being... like you, I guess I'm going off of what you're saying. I didn't even know there was a miniseries till right now.
Yeah.
But was okay. But then the 1984 Dune is kind of just widely regarded as camp, and it wasn't no one liked it. And it was written and directed by David Lynch. And the casting in that was from just looking at it. It's kind of like, oh, that could work. You know,
the casting is good in it. And some of it, it kind of comes off as stunt casting, especially like Sting as Fade Rautha, who doesn't show up in this movie.
Yeah.
Or I think that the actors like do the best they can in the environment they're given. And the art design is really cool. The music is dope in that movie.
Well, like, I was gonna say that like this one, it seems like when it came out in David Lynch's kind of life, when he was working on it, I'm just looking at it now because it was his third movie. He'd done Eraserhead and then Elephant Man. And then he did Dune. And it was such a... because Eraserhead is very like conceptual, you know, post-apocalyptic almost, even like weird black and white. And then Elephant Man is set in like the 20s or the fucking early, you know, late 1800s in England. And then Dune is a future film. And it's interesting because it is kind of like... he never really kind of touched sci-fi again forever.
Yeah.
And I wonder if he did that, if that's something that Dune did to him or what. But then there's also Jordowski's Dune.
Yeah. Which
I've seen the documentary for that. Thing that I have in my brain for Dune.
Yeah.
And what do you think of that?
So glad that movie didn't get made. It's a great documentary, and it's very interesting, and it like you get to learn a lot about Jodorowsky's work, which I think is like the greatest gift of that documentary is that you see just what his movies were and how his mind works. But no, that movie would have been a fucking dumpster fire as far as it relates to adapting Dune the book. And I'm not somebody who is, you know, when it comes to book adaptations of things that like you need to follow this text to the letter because it's sacred. No, because honestly, this movie doesn't either. And I'm really excited to like discuss what divergences or rather omissions were made to make Dune the movie happen.
Yeah.
But Jodorowsky just had no interest in the book itself.
He just had the concept. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that when that happens, that's when things go left field. Like I think you do if you want to make a good work based on a great work, you need to have not reverence, but you need to like, yeah, it's helpful if you fucking like the source material, I guess, well, is what well, I'm trying
I guess,
to say.
I mean, you brought up Lord of the Rings earlier, and mm-hmm. it is very much like, now that the more I think about it, it really feels like this movie adaptation is very similar to the adaptation yes. of Lord of the Rings by Peter Jackson, where it very much like, I mean, the only difference is this was half a movie and the other one hasn't been shot yet. And I was saying it to Brianna while watching it, it was like, I kind of wish that they shot both movies at the same time. Mm-hmm. So then you don't have to worry about how the second one's going to come off. And now I'm worried that the second one's not going to have as high of a budget, maybe, and so on and so forth. So there's going to be some tension there. But I also don't know what's going to happen in the second movie. So I don't know how much, yeah. if they needed it, this one to be much bigger, which I'm getting the feeling that it probably did. This one probably would have more ships and stuff in it. And then the next one is probably going to be a little bit more grounded and on the planet that they're on and everything like that. And
I think that so much of the budget of the initial of this in comparison, I think that so much of the practical stuff that you need for a movie like this is already like the actual, like the pre-production, right? So much of the pre-production groundwork is done because you already have costumes for the Harkonnens and the Fremen. I mean, yeah, you'll have to make more maybe for the second one, but
at least the design's all done.
You know, like there's so much groundwork that's already done by having this, and so much proof of concept is already done. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Warner Brothers is like throwing as much money at it. Look, they made their money back and then some in a pandemic. Well, like, I feel like the same way that we, do inflation, you know, when we're talking about movie budgets from 30 years ago, we'll have to do like a COVID.
Yeah.
Here's the COVID return on the movie, and here's what it would have made if it was released at a normal time.
Yeah. I'd be so, oh man, it's so insane. But like I think that this movie is bonkers and I can't wait to talk about it. But I think that the overall reaction to the movie also was kind of, it was almost just released on streaming either the same day or a week after.
It was the same day release, yeah.
And that was going to be a very big problem for it. And mm-hmm. Denis Villeneuve and everyone else who worked on the movie was very much against it because their worry was if it doesn't do well at the box office, they won't get a second one.
Yeah.
And then of course, everyone from Warner Brothers and everything is like, oh, we were always going to give it a second one. We were always, and it's like, no bullshit. You've pulled the plug.
It wasn't greenlit until you greenlit it, yeah. And it was greenlit after release.
I think that they had every right to be afraid and everything. But yeah. Before we get into it, this episode is sponsored by brewk.ca. I promised you guys all a little bit more on that later today. Well, here it is. Brewk.ca. Let me just tell you what it is as I open it up. Flowers are nice. Yeah, I'm opening up the copy as you say. But how about like tastefully curated collections featuring craft beer and superior local goods? I mean, you can get a bouquet of flowers or you can get a brewk of beer, and you can go to the website brewk.ca. brewquet.ca, and you'll be able to take a look at all of the wonderful offerings that they have. They have delivery available up until December 23rd, which is pretty crazy. But you're going to want to get in sooner rather than later to get your stuff in. So there's all these different types of beer in the world, craft beer to be precise. IPAs, pale ales, lagers, fruit and sour beers, strong stouts. But what Brewk also offers is a collection of those different beers from all these different great local craft breweries and around the Lower Mainland in Calgary, as well as different types of snacks from the Lower Mainland, such as the company Laid Back Snacks. They make a couple pretty relaxing laid back snacks, such as wasabi cracker mix, maple praline almonds, or sriracha cashews. Imagine cracking into a nice cold one while snacking on some of those. And then there's beef jerky. I'm getting looks. Beef jerky from Just Jerky, honey garlic beef jerky or roasted jalapeno beef jerky. And then also, of course, when you think of beer, you also think of chocolate bars. So they have different flavors from Zazu Bean chocolate bars, such as sea salt and almond, or pomegranate and hazelnut, or mint and cacao chocolate bars. You can go to the website, brewk.ca, choose what kind of package you would like to give to somebody. It'll include a selection of different craft beers from a local brewery. And the greatest thing is like two things. Currently, 85% of the products are local and 95% of them are Canadian, which is great. They started from a very small means, and now they've really kind of just burst into oblivion, and it's fantastic. You can go onto the website. You can choose what kind of brewkay that you would like to get somebody, and then you can use the promo code Let's Watch Pod, and you can get $5 off your order. I'm seeing now five full dollars off your order, and delivery to areas such as Vancouver, Burnaby, North Vancouver, West Vancouver, New Westminster, Richmond, Horseshoe Bay, Lions Bay, Britannia Beach, Squamish, Breckendale, or Whistler are all free delivery. So you can use the promo code Let's Watch Pod, and you can get $5 off your order today at brewk.ca. The time for beer is here. And if you don't live in any of those areas or in downtown Calgary or within Calgary city limits, and you're like, hey, wah, 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 email hello at brewk.ca to find out what the delivery fee is. I bet you the $5 would help. So use the promo code Let's Watch Pod to get $5 off your order today. The time for beer is here. What it's also time for is Dune. So I saw this movie and I thought it was fucking bonkers. I really liked it. But I also didn't like it as much as everyone else did, in mm-hmm. the sense that it's kind of, it's very Hollywood. It feels like the one thing that the movie is lacking that Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings has is it doesn't have the same level of kind of charm. But at the same it's a different story or anything. But just judging from the looking, like the way the Lynch Dune looks, that movie has charm about it. Like it has this heart weird kind of, like there was some blood put into that movie. This feels very synthetic. And I feel like it's just me pushing against the way that in real life looks to me already. Like when things are very synthetic looking and like there's no, things are very robotic, and that's the thing, is this movie is not about computers or anything like that, but it still gives that feeling of it being like I'm in an Apple store, you know? And that's the only thing, is it just feels like it's missing a little bit of that charm and a little bit of that heart.
Interesting.
But the more I watch it, like I've seen it twice now, the more I've seen it, it's kind of like this movie is bonkers. I do appreciate that it owns its shit, and you know, it over explains and under explains. Like I do appreciate that.
I think that is such an interesting point to make, because I think that when you read about Tolkien, I think that Lord of the Rings is a great comparison point to start with, because when you read about the place that Tolkien was writing Lord of the Rings from, it was from a very personal place of his experience as a World War I veteran.
Yeah.
And about the creep of industrialization and the loss of some kind of innocence. So while the theme of loss of innocence, I think, is present in this movie as well, the Frank Herbert wrote Dune, I would say, from a far more intellectual starting place than, and I think that that's also just something that is almost bound to happen when you're writing, when you're creating science fiction versus fantasy.
Interesting. How much do you know about Herbert? Like, and was this his first book?
No, this wasn't his first work. However, like he'd written short stories and things like that, but this was his seminal work, certainly.
Yeah.
And really the majority of his writing career is Dune.
All of the subsequent books.
Yeah. In the series. Not all of them. A lot of them.
His son took over and finished them, right?
Well, he did stuff. A lot of, they're not good. I'm just going to put it out there. A lot of it is retconny.
How many of them are there?
So his son has done like 20 books in, but never, not himself. He's done in collaboration with other science fiction writers like Kevin J. Anderson, whose other works are quite good. And Kevin J. Anderson has written some of the best Star Wars novels. Frank Herbert made 5.5 books. He did.
It said Dune, and it's a 5 sequels.
Yes. However, Chapter House Dune, he never finished. Was a kind of an unfinished work because he passed away.
I see.
So Dune, Dune Messiah, Children of Dune, God Emperor of Dune, Heretics of Dune, Chapter House Dune.
I see.
And yeah, so, but we're just concentrating on Dune. The reason why it is not only his seminal work, but it is like one of the works of science fiction, is that like so many things that you see and hear in other science fiction come from Dune. Like just basic, like basic superficial things like sandworms, for example, and desert planets. Like the idea of a science fiction planet that is entirely like one sort of climate or one kind of topography, that comes from this.
Like Dune was the very first thing ever to do that.
Yeah,
without Dune, we wouldn't have Tatooine.
You wouldn't have Tatooine. You wouldn't have Hoth, right? Okay. Like just going that far back, and like, because you had like pulp science fiction where they visited like a moon, but it was a moon. It wasn't, and they'd go visit another planet, and it was just, you know, California. But this Dune is like is incredible, because in the book he creates not only like this desert planet, but he creates the history of this desert planet and the anthropology of all of humanity dating 10,000 years from our current time to when this movie begins.
So it is stated that this is 10,000 years in the future.
Roughly, yeah.
Okay, so I'm just, here's the thing about talking to somebody who's into Dune.
Yes,
they can fucking go. Yeah. I'm not gonna say anything. I don't want it, because okay, what came to my mind when you were talking about it, because I got a lot of questions as well. So Dune itself, written in 1965.
Yes.
Apparently he was a guy who he was sent to study Oregon dunes, sand dunes in the Oregon dunes near Florence, Oregon. And then he got over involved and ended up with far more raw material than needed for the article that he was sent to write. The article was never written and planted the seed that led to Dune. Another significant source of inspiration for Dune was Herbert's experiences with psilocybin. So he was a big mushroom head.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. He was really big into psychedelics.
And another thing about that study is that the study that he was writing about was a study also about how to turn sand dunes into farmable land.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So all this stuff about water and, you know, all the Fremen are hoarding water, that sort of, it's part of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing that you said, that like, it was really funny, because like what I was in my head, kind of in my head, I mean, the reason I call this movie bonkers is it is very much unafraid of, I don't know why I'm holding back. Like part of me is like,
it's not afraid of its source of material.
Exactly. Yeah. But I'm just, I don't want to piss off anyone who's into Dune, but at the same time, I don't give a fuck. But yeah, it's very much like it does feel kind of like a movie or a story written by a bunch of kids, because it is very much like, I got desert power and right, water power and earth power. You know, it feels very, well, that's very early 60s, 50s sci-fi. That's probably how it was written in the book, and that's fine. But then when you translate that to a movie, it kind of comes across as stupid sounding. But that's also kind of why I like the movie, is because it's not afraid of its source material. So it kind of is like, yeah, just get into the groove with it. Like, you can make fun of it. It's really easy to make fun of it because it is dumb. It's stupid. But it's kind of fun and cool at the same time. And it is like even just the casting of Jason Momoa's character.
Yes.
You already have that character in the movie, but an old version of him being played by Josh Brolin. Is like an old version of Jason Momoa's character, basically. He's Jason Momoa's character for Oscar Isaac, basically being like his close friend.
His confidant. Yeah.
And they're older. So then this is like Jason Momoa's like to Paul, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, I can't watch Jason Momoa in anything without thinking, my man, you know, like I can't not think.
And
of
I mean,
Aquaman.
That's the vibe that he brings. And like, you're talking about like heart and connection a little bit earlier. And like, Jason Momoa, easily the most likable, like connectable character in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, the best character in the movie is Rebecca Ferguson, hands down, in my opinion.
I'm so excited to talk about what she does, but you should continue your point.
Sorry. I think that just, it helps the movie, but it has also hindered the film. And I think that that's what happens with a lot of these sort of sci-fi or fantasy movies. Like the same people that don't like Lord of the Rings are sitting there watching it being like, this is a bunch of fucking hobbits. I don't want to fucking watch a bunch of fucking stupid hobbits and a stupid long-haired elf. Like, they're not gonna.
Well, there's it's just like anything. Like, there's a certain amount of buy-in you have to do on a genre movie. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just what it is. Yeah.
No, for sure. And I just think that this movie does a good job of it, but I feel like I could have done with less hype. And I think that, because I'm such a big fan of Denis Villeneuve, it really helped me sign on to it a lot easier. I think if without him at the helm, I'd be a lot more hesitant, to be honest.
Sure. Yeah.
But but this all being said, I'm coming from strictly a perspective of somebody who's just watched a bunch of movies and just like, I know story, blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, okay, it's doing the same thing. A lot of other movies do. What I really gravitated towards most with this movie, and I feel a little dumb because it's kind of obvious with everyone, but it's like, oh, it's just like medieval times.
That's I think one of the brilliant things about the book, that it is future-proofed science fiction, in that the actual technology, like there's obviously things that don't exist and you know that are created, but the way that all the technologies in the book and in this movie work together mean that it's not like the computers aren't going to look dated 20 years from now when we watch this movie, because there are no computers in Dune. And you know, part of the coolest thing of the novel, and they think that they did a good job of getting as deep into it as they did, and not without getting too deep, was just talking about how in this future they've basically replaced computers with humans because they need to, because they've rejected computers. And that's what the Mentats are, which is
like the guys that roll their eyes to the back of their head
do complex calculations. One thing that they don't mention in the movie, which they do in the book and they talk about quite a bit, is that Paul is also a Mentat, and that's part of the things, one of the things that make him special, is that not only does he have all this Bene Gesserit training and ability, and not only has he been trained by two of the best fighters in the known galaxy, like Gurney and Duncan, but he's also like able to do those sort of complex calculations. And then he starts seeing the fucking future.
So then you also add that in there. Okay, so then, so you said it a little bit, because the reason I say medieval is because like you're emperor, then you've got all these different dukes or all these different factions and these different worlds, and they have their own lands and people will battle over everything forever, but the emperor doesn't care. So like, what, spoiler alert for Dune, fucking just go watch it, but what happened? Why is Stellan Skarsgård able to just kill them? Did the emperor allow it, or is he going against the emperor?
Yeah, the emperor is like in on it. Okay. That's why he sends his Sardaukar.
So that's why he allows the Sardaukar to go help.
Yeah, because the Sardaukar are like his personal army.
So why do they not is it because Oscar Isaac's family and race are like, we want to build peace with the Fremen?
Or is it
because they're too powerful?
I don't know if this is a spoiler for part two, but basically, yeah, it's because they're too powerful. It's really laid out in the book.
They're starting to see them more as a threat. So like, we'll kill off the bloodline and then the rest of their people won't.
The big deal is that Gurney and Duncan had managed to build a fighting force that could go toe to toe with the Sardaukar.
Oh,
okay. One-on-one. And okay. Nobody can do that in the Dune, like in the Imperium as it stands in Dune.
Because the Sardaukar are
they're just
world
the best.
That yeah. are just, all they do is fight.
It's a fucking shitty planet, and like only 1 in 12 survive to like grow up to be a Sardaukar. Like it's just this incredibly harsh, unforgiving place. Coincidentally, so is Dune.
Ah, yes. That's why the Fremen are also incredible fighters, right?
Yeah.
So that covers some stuff, because I feel like that's not incredibly clear in the movie.
And that's why I said I don't know if that's a spoiler, because honestly, I don't remember where that's discussed in the book.
Well, it's kind of discussed in the movie when Charlotte Rampling goes to Stellan Skarsgård and is like, you know, you can kill the father, but don't kill the boy or the mother. They're under our protection, blah, blah, blah. And then it's kind of like, oh, well, and then he's like, of course, you know, the emperor wouldn't allow that or something. So it's kind of already said that, like, it's kind of already talked about that the emperor is involved. But then it kind of also doesn't make sense, because it makes it feel like, oh, the Harkonnen are making money off the spice on the side. So they're giving
the Harkonnen just want to have Dune so they can continue to make money. It's very simple. And also in the book, because
they're
talk
very
about
much
it more,
just, it's all about hedonism.
There
is
a blood feud between the two factions, between the two things.
Well, they talk about that in the movie when he's about to kill Oscar Isaac, and Oscar Isaac bites down on his tooth. He's like, you know, we've been exchanging bloodlines for hundreds of years. We've been battling blood for blood. I'm just going to end it now, sort of thing. And his big villain speech.
Yeah.
And,
I'm just watching him right now. second screen. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very much like the movie does. Okay. So it does explain all of that stuff, but it does so at a rate of like a James Bond movie with Daniel Craig, where it is very like, we're going to be quick. But it's also, I mean, watching it with subtitles and stuff was really helpful. And like just being able to sit in it a little bit longer is good. But at the end of the day, it's like, I have the biggest problem I have with this movie is the ending and just how it is over. And it is kind of like, okay, well, and I feel like the last 45 minutes is the strongest of the movie, which is pretty rare for these kind of films. Usually it's the other way around. Because there's not a ton of action in the beginning of the movie. There's not a ton of like stuff that I find particularly interesting. You find more interesting about like the Fremen and everything as it goes along.
Yeah.
The villains are in it more in the last 45 minutes. So it's just kind of like, I feel.
And you get everything because, and I think it's cool that the security blanket of, you know, even though they know they're in danger when they arrive at Arrakis, you're still in this place of like, okay, but like they have all the Atreides troops and they're in this compound and they're in a city. Yeah. They're not at the mercy of the desert and they have all this wealth. Mm-hmm. And while they're in danger, you know, it seems like things are going okay. And they have all these people around them. It gets really cool and really interesting when it's just Paul and Jessica.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you're, I mean, we'd spent enough time with their world and their family. And I think the other part that I really enjoy about it is you're moving away from that clean, pristine kind of like soulless environment to one that feels like it's got more character and charm to it.
Yes.
Like plus Javier Bardem's character is fucking, he's so good in this movie and so subtle.
So good. He's so good. And I loved like his first scene, of course,
when he spits on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just incredible stuff. Yeah.
There's like so many Academy Award nominated people in that room at that one time. And it's just like, it's also just great seeing him in the same room as Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
you know, playing very, you know, since No Country for Old Men. But it's that kind of stuff, like that scene, like that kind of stuff in the movie that I really like, or the weird lore things, or like learning about the technology. And yes, it like is spoon fed to you, but it is still like, oh, it's done quickly and then it's over with. And then you get to know about their suits and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I love that they never explain the sand worm travel basically at all in this movie.
They don't really, like, honestly, they don't really explain how the sandworm can, like, moves.
But in the book, they do that, right?
Not really. Like,
what does the sandworm eat? Sand?
People? Like, that's exactly it. Like, there's the even, like, I honestly, it's been so long since I've read the sequels, and I think they get more into that in the later books.
Yeah.
About, like, the physiology of the sandworm, but they're not, yeah. It's not, do you need to know? No, of course
not. No, I mean, you don't, but it's also like, it'd be nice to know, but at the same time. Now, this is interesting. Before we, I feel like you got so much you want to talk about with Dune.
Well, I don't want to just make this like a fucking, you know, Dune audio off. Essay on, you know, what I love about the I mean, book and why it's great.
Right now in the world, you have more people on your side than you ever have.
I mean this is true. Yeah.
But it's, how do you feel that Herbert was a strong critic of the Soviet Union? He was a distant relative of the Republican Senator Joseph McCarthy.
Oh yeah, no,
referred like, to as whatever. Cousin Joe.
Yeah, he's not, I mean, whatever, I don't care. You know me. I'm pretty good at separating people from their work.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is, I think it's interesting that, so you like Russia, but not saying that you like it as
why do we have to?
No.
I find it fascinating. Yeah.
You find it fascinating, and that's totally okay, because I find it fascinating as well. I think it's a very interesting time in history, you know. It's not like you're living it, but it's like their whole idea for what the world could be and what they've done to brainwash their people and everything along those lines. Like, there's just a lot of fascinating elements to it. But like the idea that you play a lot of like you play a lot of video games that are kind of like Dune, right?
Like, I guess so. Yeah.
Army base.
They just announced a new Dune RTS at the Game Awards.
So
that's fantastic.
So, but I was going to say, what about Dune and the idea, like what this movie presents to you? Why is that so appealing to people? Do you think, is it a control thing? Is it the fundamental idea behind like just the overwhelming force that, like, because I feel like there is a lot of people that are relatively shy, introverted, who get really attached to these kind of world expanding books and everything like that. Is there something quite appealing about the brute force of it all, you know?
Well, I think the power of these people who simply through mental discipline and force of will overcome such trying situations. I think that's really powerful. To me, like the passage that first of all, there's two passages or two parts of the book that I always mentally go back to. The first one, of course, being the use of the litany of fear, you know, the I must not fear, fear is the mind killer. Because like, for example, in the movie, when Jessica is saying it, when she's outside of the room that Paul and the Reverend Mother are in. So in the book, it presents that like she's standing there calmly, but in her mind, she's going nuts. And I think that they did such a great choice of, you know, because you had two choices, right? You could either show Jessica, you know, you could do what the Lynch one did, which is they had all these like voiceover monologues to show what these characters are feeling, and instead what they did was they had mostly Jessica, just Rebecca Ferguson acted the shit out of those moments and made them more shown, because they're private moments and you can do that anyway, but she really showed what she was feeling and how these strategies and these trainings helped her control those moments. So that just emotionally, I get really attached to that, because we all have moments of anxiety and we all have moments of fear and we all have moments of needing some kind of anchor to grab onto that can help us get through an anxious time or a hard situation.
Yeah, I was sorry. If you don't mind me just
that's point one.
So like what I, because you've told me about that passage before, when I've been going through my own anxiety and my own depression and stuff, and it, you know,
and it's when I go back to unironically to get me through my own. Yeah,
well, it's a very powerful passage, you know, regardless of the source material. I think you can't deny that, and I think it's interesting that like how they did it in this movie. What I really like about it is used as almost like a mantra or a prayer.
Yeah.
And it's reflecting us so that it's very much like, I'm assuming that in the Lynch one, it is said very calmly and very, or like very like,
it's a whispered,
fear is the mind killer. Blah,
it's
blah,
a
blah.
Whispered voiceover in the Lynch movie mostly.
But is it paranoid? Is it just whispered? Like just said?
It's a lot of the delivery is like, I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer.
Okay.
Because
again, I really like that she's like panicking. And so it's like very much like she's trying to get to a place where it is very much like, I'm going to be okay. My son's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. Fear is a mind killer, blah, 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 blah. And she does it again when they're in the plane.
Yeah. When they're in the ornithopters. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that was something I wanted to add for that, but yeah, go ahead. And what was the second passage?
Just the Reverend Mother explaining the difference between an animal and a human.
Oh, okay.
Because that's, to me, is like maybe the most fundamental thing about humanity is you know, our mental abilities versus our animal instincts.
Yeah.
Interesting. And that's, and because everything is a outcropping of one of those two things.
True.
And so every day you have to sort of make a decision of like, you make millions of little decisions of, am I going to follow my animal instincts or am I going to be a human? And that's a really like oversimplification of what people go through on a daily basis. But, you know, sometimes when I'm like, if you have a binary choice that you have to make in a situation, sometimes that is a good way of sorting it. Is like, is one of these the animal, is one of these the human response?
Yeah, no, that's really good. It's interesting. Yeah.
Which and it just, yeah, that's it. That's it for those things. Yeah.
No. And so like in the books, so what did they choose to just not put in the movie?
So the stuff about the Mentats, there's a lot of technical stuff. Like you saw when they were carving through the door, they were using a laser, and you saw a little bit when the ornithopter that, that they were in was escaping.
Yeah.
Or that Duncan or that Gurney, that Duncan was in, was escaping in. You saw the las guns that they were using.
Yeah.
So fun technical interactions between Dune and las guns. You can't use las guns in the desert.
Because it's sand.
Sorry, no, you can use las guns in the desert. However, you can't use las guns against shields. Because if a las gun hits a shield, both devices will have a nuclear detonation.
Oh, okay.
So people generally don't use las guns all that much in actual warfare.
But you're talking about that big laser gun?
Yeah, the blue lasers that cut through everything. If they hit a shield, it's a nuke. Both sides. So you kill everything.
Well, they don't have that in the movie because his plane gets hit by one.
Well, they don't have a shield on the ornithopter.
Yeah, they do.
Oh yeah, they do. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
But it's just something they took out of it. But
and then shields, you can't use them in the desert in the book because they attract sandworms.
That's what they do say that in the movie too. Why don't you just put a shield on the sandwalker or the sand machine?
Yeah, because it attracts them.
Because it's constantly vibrating.
Yes, right? Exactly. Yeah. So
it makes sense.
So there's those two things, which is why the fighting between, of course, the Fremen is different. Like the melee fighting is different between the Fremen and Paul, like Jamis and Paul, because Paul's used to having to slow his strikes to get through a shield, and Jamis is not.
Hmm. Yeah, because then the strikes, the slow sword gets through the
shield.
Gets the stake. Yeah, the slow sword.
So that's a fun technical thing. I'm trying to think of what else is like really important that's omitted.
But for the most part, a lot of the big glaring stuff they've omitted because it's going to come back in the second book, most likely, because it's story based?
Or... I think so. Yeah. Like I had a really hard time. And like, what is your impression at the end of the movie of where it's going to go? Because what I really enjoyed watching was it's such a cringe category on YouTube, but the reaction videos, I fucking hate them. However, I specifically sought out the Dune ones because I really wanted to see what people who had no experience with the movie previously or the book walked away with. As far as the story goes, like, what is your perception of Paul and Jessica and what the future may hold for them and what their situation is?
Well, there's two things. One, he's either not the one, and it's actually his brother or sister who she's pregnant with is the one. And I think that he's going to, form an alliance through blood, marrying Shia. What's her name?
Shani. Yeah,
Shani. Because she's going to be of some sort of royalty or something, so he's going to marry her, and that will cause him to get the full force of the Fremen, and then he will take over Dune and use it to, I don't know, control the universe. Or he makes the talk about going and trying to make a play at becoming the emperor himself, and I think that could potentially happen, but I just don't feel like, I feel like he's either going to do that and then, but his overall goal is to just come back and live on Dune and mm-hmm. have desert power and live there happily. But I don't know. Am I kind of right?
Well, there's like the it's his visions that are the most important thing.
Well, here's
it's
the thing, like, about the visions in the movie that I really appreciated, and I said this after I watched it again, was like, I like that they're always different. And like, I like that they're not necessarily different, but they'll be subverted your expectations. So
it's because,
like,
he's not seeing the future.
He's seeing
future. Possible futures. Yeah.
And so it's like him with Jameis, and Jameis like, I'll show you the desert, but then he actually kills Jameis in a duel, but then by doing that he is learning about the desert. So it's kind of like there is that way of doing it. So it's kind of like this weird twisted like way of him being able to see the future and yada yada yada, but it's also, you don't know what it's going to be, you know? So I think that that's interesting and it works, but so you can't believe everything you see happens in his visions, like him fighting alongside the Fremen and everything. That may not,
it may not come to be. Yeah. And I also appreciated that, like, that was a shot that was really used in the trailer, that the one vision where they're like, it's all flippity do fighting and with the explosions. And I seeing the trailer is like, that ain't how it is. That's a vision. That's not how it's actually going to be.
But, I mean, it's a book that's been out for 60 years or so longer. We could talk about the next one now. Do you just want to tell me what happens? Or do you think?
No, I don't. I really want you to experience what happens as it happens. However, I'd love to like sort of get into the more technical aspects now, because there's two things that there are two moments where I 100% bought in, and they were both music and sound moments.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I was sitting in a theater and I was like, this is good. And then the first time Paul used the voice and it was delayed and you hear this like reverberating, give me the water.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm liking this. And the second one was something that was 100% Villeneuve's thing, not in the book whatsoever, but it was when they land on Arrakis and Hans Zimmer comes out playing the fucking bagpipes.
That was Hans Zimmer.
First of all. And he's playing on its own. And it's like this like really melancholic theme. And you're like, wow. And then the all the bagpipe players come in and it's this huge anthem. I was like, woo. Okay. You motherfuckers, you got me. That was it. Like I just get charged thinking about it now. That was one of my favorite movie going moments in a while. I mean, obviously with COVID, but I mean, I saw I saw Black Widow and Suicide Squad in theaters. So yeah.
Like, yeah, no, you're exactly.
It also just felt good to see a fucking movie that was like a movie, experience. Yeah.
I went and saw this, and yeah, it was the third movie I saw in theaters. The first two were just like little horror movies, or mm-hmm. like Candyman and The Empty House. And then this was like, this is fucking back to Hollywood, you know, this is back to theaters, you know, kind of feeling. And it was good though. It was good to watch it with the sound design is really good. I really enjoyed technically this movie on a technical level is very impressive. And like, I think that Denis Villeneuve has got such an incredible eye. And I do love that all of his movies are he's very Fincher-esque in his delivery, that you can look at a Denis Villeneuve movie in one shot, you'll be able to tell, oh, that's a Denis Villeneuve movie. Yeah. I know exactly his style and how he shoots things. And
well, like I'm watching the Sandcrawler scene right now, and it's just like all these little things, like, you know, focus shifts and you know, the vibration of the sand as the worm is approaching. Like it's just all these little touches that are so could have not been in the movie, but they are, and they just everything has so much texture and depth visually and auditorially that is, you know, just it's just something that this movie can't be made without those things.
Yes, and I think that that's kind of the biggest takeaway I've heard from this movie, is that it really couldn't have been made until technology caught up with what needed to be portrayed on screen and stuff like that. And like, it's very much like we needed to get to a place where we could have visual effects at a level to be able to show you what the sandworm's gigantic size and everything is like, so that it doesn't come across as being kind of humorous in some way, shape or form. And then like, even just like I have some problems with the CGI in this movie. Second time watching it, it wasn't as bad for me, but it is very much one of those things where I just enjoy seeing more practical effects. And there's a lot of practical effects in this movie, which are very good. I think the first time I watched it, I was a little, I didn't know what to expect when it came to the shields. And then I felt that was just too much of an effect.
Which is so interesting, because in the Lynch one, it's, it's bad. It's it's just straight up bad. Please.
Is it like a pod that goes over them?
It's a bunch of like CGI squares. No, they're not CGI. They were actually all hand drawn in, but it looks CGI, which is impressive in and of itself.
Yeah.
But it's like a bunch of squares over their body.
Oof.
Yeah.
Not good. Not good.
Yeah.
Very bad. No good. But yeah, no, I think that for the most part, like everything on a technical level, the movie does a lot right.
And art design, and
it's going to win everything at the Oscars for cinematography and visual effects and sound and design.
It'll get nominated for Best Picture, but it won't win.
Yeah.
Best Charlie director, Rampling, honestly, maybe.
What? Sorry?
Best director? Maybe.
Maybe. Ferguson? Maybe.
Yeah.
I could see her getting a nom at least. I think she's incredible in it.
She, she, aside from Paul, she really is the central character of the film. So,
Well, she's also just the most interesting character, because you're going to get into it. And I said Jesuit a couple of times, but it's actually Jesuit.
Yeah. Right? Bene Gesserit. Yeah.
So what's their deal in the world?
First of all, speaking of like influences, the Jedi are like very clearly influenced by the Bene Gesserit as far as like
the
this
Jedi.
Order of superpowered people who had, you know, maintain order throughout the galaxy. We see that here. The Bene Gesserit are a little more behind the scenes, and they're of course exclusively women. So they're exclusively women, and like they sort of talk about that, they touch on it in the movie as well, but that there are they're so everywhere that like even Dune, the Fremen religion has been seeded by the Bene Gesserit, so that if they happen to show up there, it would be like super easy for them to just be like reference a folktale offhand and have the Fremen be like, how the fuck do they know about this part of our culture? And that's what's going on with Paul and her a lot, is like they've, there's all these things that are planted ahead of time by the Bene Gesserit so that, again, they can just show up. And that's why the relationship, that's why there's a relationship formed so closely with Shadow Mapes, the housekeeper in Arakeen. Because she, like, Jessica just like says the right things that she knows to say.
And then the person's like, oh, you know,
in the book it's based, she's like, is it this thing that I should say, or is it this thing? Because if it's this thing, then she'll worship us, and if it's this thing, then she'll kill me where I stand right now. And she just picks one and it works out.
I see. Well, there you go. I really like the hand signal talking, the sign language shit. I think that's really cool.
That's from the book as well. And of course, the way they use the voice, like in the ornithopter with the guards. And that, I mean, it's so terrifying. It's so terrifying the way she uses it.
But is that directly from the book too?
Yeah.
The book does the same thing where it is like all these characters and then it just turns to him, or is it all being told through the perspective of Paul?
In that scene, actually, it's actually from Jessica's perspective.
Oh, okay. Because
he tries to use it and she's like, no, he's fucking it up. He's doing this. He's using too much of a high pitch. Like she gets very specific in her inner monologue about what he's doing wrong.
Interesting.
And but it's the same thing with like having a deaf guard in there because they know that she can use the voice, and having her gagged. Yeah. But like
there's a lot to it. And I do appreciate it. Like it's a movie that I appreciate, even though it's dumb and it's sci-fi, but that's, it's also like,
it's not dumb, but I will fight you on that.
But I use dumb in like the loving sense, the same way I think that Lord of the Rings is dumb. But like, I think any story that is kind of being told from a different, like it's really interesting. And what I didn't know, like doing a quick read about him and what inspired the book in the first place, it actually makes me want to read the book because I feel like I would get more out of it. And I feel like I would get more of the stuff that I feel like is missing in the movie.
My friend Max started reading the book before the movie came out. He saw the trailer and he was like, you know what? I'm going to read this.
Yeah.
Every time, like we only work together like once or twice a week. And every time I was like, so where are you at now? And we talk about it.
Yeah.
And it was my favorite thing. So,
like, how many times have you read the book?
I think I just finished read through number 9 or 10.
Oh, wow.
I do it about like once every 2 years or so.
Wow. How many pages is it?
600 to 700 to 800, depending on what kind of font and edition you get.
Yeah.
And where they ended the movie is exactly where part one ends in the book.
Oh, okay.
And I actually thought that they would end it later because
there's two parts in the book?
Three.
Oh, okay.
But because, yes. Is that right? God, I need to do it again. But I got to do it again.
Yeah.
But no, actually, right now I'm reading Dune Messiah again.
Which is the second one.
Which is the second one. And they actually get progressively denser and some of them are longer. But
I've heard that Denis Villeneuve said he's got in mind for a trilogy, and the first two movies in the trilogy is going to be part one and part two of the book.
Messiah and do Children of Dune. Yeah.
Dune Messiah is just supposed to be the third movie, apparently.
But, really? Interesting. That makes sense too. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, could you see it them just doing Dune and that being enough?
I could see them doing the Dune as it is and it being enough.
They don't need to do
the one book. I don't need, no, should. Yes. And in fact, like I could see, because I think as much of a risk as doing Dune part one was, just to see if the studios would go for a second one.
Yeah.
Dune Messiah will be an even greater risk to see if those things get bought into. For a studio to make Children of Dune.
Interesting.
Because I think that it would be worth making Children of Dune. But that one is a little further. It's more disconnected. It's as far as sequels go. And then that one, and then after that, the books get way more disconnected.
Okay.
And that would be where things get wild.
Okay.
Yeah. You think this is bonkers, Bryce?
Yeah.
Everyone who's listening who has read the books, the other books, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
This shit doesn't hold a fucking candle to what happens later on.
Well, I'm very interested to see where it comes in. I'm guessing there's a lot more races of people that have not been introduced. A lot more.
No, it's pretty much just humans.
Oh, so these are all just humans.
Everything, yeah. These are all humans. So
the Fremen don't have water for blood, right? That was just a...
No. They just, when people die in Fremen culture, they just extract every ounce of moisture from their body.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because there's a scene in the movie when she gets stabbed, when she's waiting for the sandworm, and she gets stabbed and water comes out.
That's from the still suit.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's from the suit, it's not from the body. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, yeah, we were like, oh, Jesus turned water into wine. Like, is this some weird Jesus thing where all their blood is now water? Blah, 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 blah.
But garbage, yeah.
Just a shot. Yeah. No. I mean, I'm not... I want it to be known for all Dune fans, including my guest today. I don't think that Dune is dumb. I don't think you're dumb for liking it. I think all sci-fi and fantasy is stupid and bonkers and just fun and needed in this world. So
yeah,
I think it's a very valuable thing. That being said, it's stupid.
I mean, it can be, but it's not. Like,
yeah,
like okay. you're
wrong. Like
you're
wrong. Okay. Yeah. Now we're back at square one.
Well,
yeah.
It's like it would be like showing someone to speak about science fiction in general. Like science fiction can be really dumb, can be extraordinarily dumb.
Yeah.
Dune is not an example of dumb. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I know. Giant worms, they're not dumb. There's elements of it that are dumb.
We live on a planet.
Yeah.
Where there's an animal.
Yeah.
Horses? Literally, koalas.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about, can we ride horses?
Koalas, 90% of their head is skull because they're so fucking stupid that they'll fall out of the trees. Do you know, and their digestion system, they can't digest anything until they're adults.
Yeah.
So they have to eat their parents' feces in order to gain the enzymes to eat. You want to tell me the platypus exists, Bryce?
Yeah.
And you want to tell me sandworms are dumb?
Xavier, thank you so much for coming.
The dodo.
No, the sandworm is cool. We'll all admit you're right. The sandworm is cool. Is that what you want me to say? Does that make you feel better?
I don't know. You should say it's cool, but to say that it's categorically.
It says Bryce Logan thinks the sandworm is cool.
No, it has to be categorized. Like, these are all the animals Bryce thinks are perfectly reasonable, and this is the fictional animal he thinks is dumb.
Exactly. And then on the back is like, this shirt has been bought and paid for by Xavier DeSalvo. Yeah.
You can reach my GoFundMe at.
Yes, exactly. GoFuckBryce.com.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, when Dune Part 2 comes out, you're obviously going to be on and we can watch it and we'll talk about it. Maybe we'll do a commentary for it or something. We'll get into the weeds with it. But Xavier, thank you so much for coming on the show.
More than a pleasure. I'm very happy that you gave me the honor of doing this with you so I could explode at the idea that sandworms are dumb.
Yeah. No, I love it. I'm happy that you kept your cool the whole time into that moment. but Xavier, is there anything you want to plug right now? Is there anything that you want?
Not at all.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah.
Actually, sure. Fuck it. Why not? If you're in the Vancouver area, I'm bar managing a new fun little restaurant called Zarak by the Afghan Kitchen. It's amazing food and I make good cocktails and I'm going to be bringing some fun wine in. So, you know, you come in, you and then we can talk.
Yeah,
I have a knock at the door though, so this is that was me. A perfect time for you. No, I think that was my door.
Okay, I'll do my outro
and I'll be right back.
Okay. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening to the show. Thank you to Xavier DeSalaberti for being on the show again. As for me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Let's Watch Pod. You can email me at letswatchthatpodcast@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bruce Lagoon or at Let's Watch Pod. Shoot me a DM if you want to be on the show. If you like Dune and you want to get mad at me, then yeah, go for it there. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll get mad at you here. Yeah, it was you knocking on your desk, you piece of shit. What is this, a Twitch stream? What is wrong with you?
It was just my teeth, man. thank you to Keenan Federico and Good Comedy for the music. Thank you to, I don't know, Dune for existing in multiple formats to help Xavier and people to like books and fun things. And thank you to the world for stupid sci-fi, because it makes the world go around.
Yeah, fuck you too, buddy.
As for everything else, Dune from 2021 part 1, we watched that.